6:05. Good to have you this Monday morning. Unfortunately, we have to deal with another mass shooting situation, this time a little too close to home in Grand Blanc Township at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. A man drives a truck into the church, opens fire, sets the church on fire, a massive blaze, and four people are dead as a result, and that includes the shooter. Lloyd, Jamie, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's, I don't, the FBI saying this is targeted violence. Thankfully, police responded very quickly.
Within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the chief in just a minute. People gathering on a Sunday for church, targeted in a deadly attack.
I know. And I came in here this morning and I said, is this what we're going to have to deal with every week? It's one shooting after another. What is wrong? What is wrong with people? Why are people just so violent right now?
I don't think it's right now. I know it feels that way, but there have been so many mass shootings and so many things going on in this country where it's like, what is going on?
So people are just getting numb to it because there's been so many?
I do.
Oh, there's definitely an element
to
that.
So quick.
Yes.
That we're not even talking about that, those kids getting killed in school at church.
Right.
We're not talking about that anymore because we have the Charlie Kirk assassination and now this.
I mean, there was a school shooting the day that Charlie Kirk got assassinated.
In Colorado, which we didn't talk about because of the
and I think nobody died in that.
Quantity of how many is happening here.
Right. Yeah. Right, but this is where we've found ourselves. And again, I mean, we've done the song and dance of like, what do you do? What do you do? I mean, Michigan passes these red flag laws. They pass these laws. Something like this happens. Maybe this guy already had a gun, right? He's a military veteran, 40-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Possible, but something happened here. Something snapped in this person. Something always. Look, the thing that I think we can always say in these situations is one day you are not a shooter, right? One day just a person.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next you are now, a suspect or a shooter or a deceased shooter. Something changes in an instant for these people. Mm-hmm. And we don't have all the details yet. There is still a lot of investigation to be done, particularly because the shooter was killed. Here's William Rennie, the police chief there in Grand Blanc Township, and he talked about the quick response by police.
We had officers on scene at 10:25 and 57 seconds. The suspect, again, we're in the preliminary stages right now, was neutralized at 10:33:44 in the parking lot of that church.
They were there just over 50 seconds from when this first happened, when the attack happened at 10:25.
There were two trained officers who took this guy down. Mm-hmm. One from Township Police, one from the Michigan Department of Natural Resources at 10:33. So just minutes after it happened. But that still didn't save four people.
No, and right. Probably did save other lives. Probably did save other lives.
Yeah.
With how quickly they acted. But then once this guy opens fire, he sets the church on fire.
Right.
And initially when these reports started coming out, it was one dead, shooter dead. So two total. But then later, as they were digging through the rubble of the fire, they found two additional deceased victims. And, you hear a lot from the people in the community and, you hear this a lot in many of these instances. I cannot believe this happened here. I cannot believe this happened in this community. This is a simple, little, quiet community. How could this possibly happen here?
I lived in this community. I lived off of Saginaw Road when I worked at WEYI. And you just would come out of my apartment, turn right, and go up here, pass Warwick Hills, and make a left on McClandish. And that's where this church is. I lived there. It was very nice.
So you passed this church?
Yes.
Countless times?
Yes. Yes, it's a nice, beautiful little town. It's great. Grand Blanc High School, all of that. Lovely. So something snapped within this person who might have had some PTSD situation because of his service to our country. I think there's got to be discussion about, are we doing enough for our veterans? That's sure. going to come up in the next couple days.
Yeah, yeah.
The FBI is taking the lead on this. So says Reuben Coleman, the special agent in charge of the Detroit office.
I can confirm at this time that the FBI is now leading the investigation and is investigating this as an act of targeted violence.
So targeted violence. Again, we'll see what that means specifically.
Yeah.
But again, you're talking about a place of worship. You're talking about, you know, people who are practicing their faith on a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So that is obviously is going to be looked at by authorities. They did conduct a search warrant at what we suspect to be this man's home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had heavy police presence there, a lot of specialized equipment there. It didn't sound like there was additional people involved here, no. Lone gunmen. You know, a lot of the similarities that are shared with other instances around the country.
And I know some striking nurses at Henry Ford Genesis Hospital say they were turned away when they offered to help care for some of the victims of the shooting yesterday. The Teamsters Local 332, which represents nearly 750 nurses and caseworkers, said at least six members were ready to assist, including ER and ICU staff, but the hospital administrators declined. Union President Dan Glass called it human lives first, noting many of the nurses have decades of experience at the hospital. A hospital spokesperson said it was fully staffed and had made alternate arrangements to care for victims. Striking staff don't have access to electronic records or medications, making it impossible to safely provide patient care. That strike began back in September 1st, over contract disputes, but both sides emphasized the focus remains on supporting the victims and community during this tragedy.
And, you know, we have all of the elected officials coming out with their statements. Mm-hmm. I know the governor sent a statement, McDonald Rivett, congresswoman from that area, saying the same kind of thing. I'm beyond devastated by the shooting this morning at Grand Blanc's Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Joseph and I are praying for the victims and the entire Grand Blanc community. This kind of violence in a place of worship is despicable.
Yeah, I mean,
it just is.
It takes me back to the shooting in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
At the synagogue.
Which attacked Jewish people.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of people died there, too. I mean, this is happening in our country. It's a cycle.
Well, and what people I don't think about, too, it's so visceral initially.
Yeah.
And it's shocking and it's horrific. And it's something straight out of a horror movie. But then you realize, well, it's happening in real life. And then it's the residual effect. It's, yeah, the people that are in that building are going to be forever impacted.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, obviously, if you lost a loved one, that goes without saying. But then it's the community. Then it's everybody that is impacted by this. Look what happened in Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look what happened in any of these situations. Your whole community is decimated.
And are we living in a time now where we're going to have, you know, armed, you know, people in the church, around the church, in the lobby of the church? I mean, some churches do have security in the church, but I mean, is that how it's going to be now? You can't go to church and pray without fear or something.
Well, wasn't that the case? Where was that church shooting here? Was that in Warren? Where was that church? Somebody came in and then was taken out by one of the security folks.
By the security people.
Oh, yeah. In like the pulpit area.
Yeah. So I mean, again, how many lives you saved?
But
is that the society we want to live in?
Exactly.
Metal detectors, armed people in schools, armed people in churches.
Church.
What are we doing? This doesn't happen other countries. Other Western countries.
No, it's true. And I mean, even with my kids, like there's all those discussions. Should they have metal detectors in school? Should they have clear backpacks? I used to think, no way. What a way to ruin a childhood. And then I thought, you know what? Whatever my childhood was, whatever your childhood was, is totally different.
Different, yes.
It's different. And I think the emphasis should certainly be focused on keeping people safe. But Jamie's right. I mean, the realities are the reality, and this is something that happens here.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible.
And too often.
We'll continue to talk about this throughout the morning, but we'll take a break. Coming up on the other side, Mike Lee of Cranes Detroit Business joins us to highlight some other major stories here in the Detroit area. It's next on JR Morning.
Welcome back to JR Morning. It is a Monday, and we always talk to our friends over at Cranes Detroit Business for the Cranes Detroit interview, brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org. Mike Lee, managing editor at Cranes Detroit Business, joins us this morning. Mike, good morning. What's happening in the city?
Good morning, Lloyd. It's budget week in Lansing, at least. Late last week, the lawmakers announced and Governor Gretchen Whitmer announced they'd reached a deal that creates a path to a consistent road funding source, $1.8 billion. Question is whether that's actually enough. The proposals that have floated around said that the state needs more like $3.9 billion a year to maintain its roads, but it is a step forward. Everyone involved agrees it's a step forward. It creates a dedicated funding source, partially from a gas 20-cent a gallon gas tax, which replaces the 6% sales tax, so that's about a wash. Also adds a 24% wholesale tax on cannabis, which, you know, just somehow by coincidence will create $420 million in annual funding. You know, the state's been basically paying for the massive roads program under Whitmer with the credit card by selling bonds. So this, you know, this is certainly a step forward in terms of creating a consistent source of funding. One industry is very unhappy about the deal, and that's that cannabis industry. It's a business that has not been doing well because of oversupply and low prices, and some folks on the cannabis side of the aisle say that this will create more stressed businesses and more companies leaving the state.
All right, and Spirit Halloween, you know, you see those everywhere. It's like, oh, it must be Halloween because they're popping up, but they may stay a while now.
Yeah, this is a kind of a new twist from Spirit Halloween. In a former Joann's store in Novi, this year they will be opening Spirit Christmas, taking up business in more of the year. It's going to have Santa photos, something called an immersive peppermint village. I'm not sure what that is. but the company has been testing these Christmas stores around the country in a few places, and they're now rolling them out bigger. There's going to be one in Novi, one in Grand Rapids as well. They're going to have about 30 of them this year. It's a big space. It's going to be at West Oak Shopping Center across the street from 12 Oaks Mall. As I said previously, home to the now bankrupt Joann Fabrics. So they're following the tradition of taking up the empty failed big box stores, if nothing else.
And Mike Duggan's getting donations from everywhere, all across the political aisle.
Yeah, Mike Duggan, running as an independent for governor, has he outraised his competitors in the beginning of the governor's race, and we took a look at who some of those donors are and talked to them why they're backing an independent, why they think an independent can win, an independent like Duggan at least. But he raised $3.2 million in 6 months. Some of his, you know, he's got backers from the former GOP state chair Jeff Sakwa, university board members on the Democratic side of the aisle, big names like Roger Penske, Rich Baird, former Governor Snyder aide, the Nicholson family, PBS Chemicals. Those are all usual, pretty consistent Republican donors who come out and given to Mike. Mark Bernstein from the U of M Board of Regents, Dan Gilbert's Rocket PAC gave $25,000, and four members of the Ford family have each given the maximum to him. So remains to be seen if he can, how competitive a race, whether an independent can win in this partisan environment. But that's part of what these donors say that they're backing. They think that an independent is what is needed to cut through the partisanship.
Also, as we get, you know, closer to Halloween coming up, we got a big haunted house that everybody likes to go to, but this is going to be the first time it's going to be operating without that creative mastermind who started it.
Yeah, the Erebus haunted attraction in Pontiac is entering its 26th season, but its founder and visionary Ed Terebus, hence the name, died last June at age 62, kind of untimely. His family members are continuing on to run Erebus this year. They opened on about a week ago. It's a half mile attraction, 65 rooms. It's a huge place. It's drawn almost 1 million visitors in its time. Ed Terabus's brother Jim and Jim's two sons are now running it this year, they will continue on. This year they've themed it on artificial intelligence, and this is really this is still the brainchild of its founder, because much of the planning and design work was done far earlier in the year when he was still alive. So they built this into a big and sturdy business that is now entering a second generation, and I think they're going to keep scaring people.
Right. All right, Mike Lee, we will read these and other stories and the pages of Crane's Detroit Business. We thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You also went to one of the biggest concerts in a venue ever.
One of
here in the United
States.
The
biggest ticketed concert in history. 112,408 people packed the Big House to see the headliner, Zach Bryan. They say that they sold a ton of merch, too, maybe $5 million in merch, which would be a record
as
well.
Oh, my
gosh, man. The previous record was held by George Strait, 110,905, and then before that was The Grateful Dead in 1977. But it was an unbelievable experience on Saturday, and now the Big House is open for business. They're going to do concerts, you know, I think a lot.
Regularly.
I love John Mayer. I just was sitting in the seats being like, I've loved him since 2001. Okay. And he sounds the same. He was great. There was another opener, Bingham and the Texas Gentlemen. They were first. And then it was really cool. It was in the round. So the stage was like in the middle.
Middle, yeah.
And everyone
great.
Could see.
Yeah.
Zach Bryan is very catchy and it was fun. It was really fun.
I wonder if you expect maybe a Taylor Swift concert at the Big House?
Maybe.
I mean,
look.
You know, if you're going to start having big concerts and have that many people in the stadium.
Makes a lot of sense to me.
I mean, you know.
Zach Bryan on stage actually said, like, this is unbelievable. I can't believe all of you people are here to see me. I was playing a 1,000-seat venue 3 years ago in Detroit.
That's really cool.
And now look at him.
Well, I love those stories.
That's
of,
huge,
like,
man.
Artists that come up like that.
Yeah.
And then to do what he did there. I, you know, I'm also a big John Mayer fan, and he's just excellent. Truth be told, never had heard of Zach Bryan before they announced this show, but I'm in the minority, clearly.
Yeah. All those people in that stadium were singing every word of these Zach Bryan songs, every single word. And there's a real young following. Like, a lot of parents brought their young, like, you know, teenagers. It was cool.
That's really cool. So you think they're going to do more of these?
Yes.
Yeah.
Open for business.
Yeah, open for business.
Coming up, we will talk more about that tragic incident that happened in Grand Blanc. We'll talk to a retired special agent in charge of the FBI Detroit Division next at 6:35 on JR Morning.
So the investigation into Thomas Sanford, the 40-year-old man from Burton who shot up the LDS church in Grand Blanc, is officially underway. Certainly a very active crime scene out at the church. Let's bring in Daniel Roberts, the former head of the FBI in Detroit, once again. Daniel, good morning to you. What does this investigation look like as the FBI says that they are heading it up? What are they looking at right now?
Well, clearly they're opening a civil rights investigation targeting largely freedom of religion would give them the jurisdiction they need to be involved in that. But they bring so many assets to the table. You know, everything from bomb technicians to victim witness specialists, and as well as, of course, a cadre of great investigators that can help try to determine what the motive was for this horrific crime.
Daniel, from your experience, you know, what does this combination of gunfire, you got fire, you got potential improvised explosive devices, what does that suggest about the planning and the mindset of this attacker?
Yeah, it tells me that it was probably extensive. There's no way that he just, you know, thought of that a couple of minutes before the attack and then went and did it. He had to have planned this out quite a bit ahead of time. And that's why you know, the background investigation that's been going since this started is going to be so key to determining what was going on in his life before this happened. You know, looking at all of his computers, looking at what's in his home. Maybe they'll find a manifesto or something similar to that in his workplace or his home. So it's going to be key for the investigation to determine what the motive was here.
When you think about how quickly police responded and exchanged fire with this person, I mean, they probably saved a lot of lives, but they couldn't have gotten there any quicker, and still four people are dead. It's just sad.
You know, you are right, Jamie. That was a fantastic response by the police department. I saw it was like 30-second response time for the initial officer to arrive, and then something like 8 minutes later, they had taken care of the subject, and that is just a phenomenal response time in any jurisdiction. So hats off to the Grand Blanc Township Police Department, and I believe DNR officers also responded that were in the area. Additionally, none of them were injured, which is also good news for that. But yes, you're right. It's you know, it's one of those things. I don't know how you would do it any faster unless the venue had its own private security on site. That's about the only way that I can see that things could have been any more improved in terms of law enforcement response. It's just tragic. The whole situation is just tragic. And really, I know that churches and other, you know, houses of worship are looking to improve their security and put additional people there. The Jewish community in particular has been working on that for a long time. And it's just sad that we have to come to that, though.
Yeah, certainly. Daniel Roberts, always appreciate your insight. Thank you so much. I want to bring in
My
Chris
pleasure.
Swanson, the sheriff in Genesee County, who's obviously been involved in this investigation. Certainly, Chris, a terrible situation for the community this morning.
You're right. Your previous guest made, you know, some very important key points to your listeners, and that is law enforcement was noble. We were there, and, you know, but those first officers on scene, they saved a lot of lives, but also there was heroes inside the LDS church.
Yeah.
Those stories will come out. So they were prepared, and this is a situation where if you think and put yourself into it, you wake up on a beautiful Sunday morning, you go to church, you're in there, your kids are in the classroom, you're worshiping, and then tragedy strikes and the sympathetic response kicks in.
What's the sheriff's
reality?
Yeah, what's the sheriff's department's role in this? Obviously, Grand Blanc has the jurisdiction. The FBI is handling a portion of this investigation. What's the sheriff's department's role here?
Yeah, these are scenes where everybody's involved.
Okay.
And, you know, you go to where you have the best outcome for the community and for justice. And so, you know, first officers on scene, my office, Grand Blanc Township, DNR, paramedics, fire, and then it escalates. I got on just shortly after 11 o'clock. And at that point, state police, they're en route and on scene. And then, of course, because it's a church, because it's domestic terrorism, suspects killed. Now you have, you know, multiple people that you're trying to, you know, reunify, and you have an active fire, and then it just escalates from there. ATF, FBI, then it escalates to, you know, incident command. We go through, and then I have to say, I've been doing this for 33 years. It was a beautiful thing to see. There were no egos yesterday. Everybody worked together to figure out who can do what, who has what services. And that's why it's important. Jurisdiction is one thing, but it's more who has the resources to respond. And all of that worked out. And clearly it's a federal issue at this point because of, you know, all the things that your previous guest mentioned and beyond.
Sheriff, I'm just wondering, how do you personally process the weight of an event like this? And how does that, you know, personal burden inform your approach to leading your department through such a difficult time?
So, great question, because, you know, first responders, police, fire, EMS, there's just a different gear. And, you know, not to be, you know, not to be anything more than what we are, but, you know, when you sign up for the job to answer 911 calls and to go into tragedy, it's a kind of a phase you go into just to make it happen. And doing it as long as I've done it, and seeing all that happen, it's what we prepare for, it's what we plan for in peace. And so to have it roll out, it just something that, okay, you've been here. I would say in my crew, I said, you know, prepare in peace to perform in chaos. So I don't want to say it doesn't impact. It does. I mean, it's reality. It's human. It's, but you have to go into your business mode to protect and save lives and bring justice. And I saw everybody yesterday do that, and they're continuing to do it and will continue to do it. But that's how you prepare for the agency is, you know, this is what we've been trained to do. This is what we signed up to do. This is what we've prepared to do. Now go do it for the people that need it the most.
And just about the community, they already came together and held a vigil that night. Mm-hmm. I used to live there just off of Saginaw Road. I mean, the high school is right up the road on Saginaw. Right. I mean, this is a nice community. How is everyone reacting?
That's another beautiful thing I will tell you is we had people come out from all areas to just do something. We had people going to the Trillium to try to hug folks. We had, you know, people dropping off food and for response. They just wanted to do something. And that's the call to action today is, yes, there's a tragedy, but the community's got to coalesce and unify together. And, you know, pointing fingers and trying to create divides is not the answer. You've got a wounded community. You got a country that as many times they feel uncertain. There's a kind of an overview of, you know, what's next. This is some great moments that we can shine together. And I saw that yesterday, and it was just beautiful moments of beautiful people during this tragedy simultaneous.
Have you had conversations with other faith leaders in the county about, you know, preparing for something like this or making sure they're on alert?
Right. Part of the thing that happened was, you know, this was happening live time while other churches were going. So there was a network that happened. And this is the positive thing about social media is because it was out so fast, other churches went in lockdown. Other churches increased their outside perimeter just to take precautions. And we're doing the same thing today, you know, making sure that, you know, schools are protected one level higher. There's Grand Blanc. You mentioned Jamie Grand Blanc. They shut down today because of the impact and the resources will be tied up on the scene. That's literally 2 miles from the campus. But on top of that, you know, it's a way for all of us to look at our procedures and our preparedness. The sheriff's office, among other law enforcement, we have taught tens of thousands of people active shooter training, and you continue to be, you know, vigilant and be aware and look for signs that could have preempted something, you know, for the future. But this is a reality that we all need to be aware of, and we need to be prepared for it. And should something happen, we know how to respond and react.
Genesee County Sheriff Chris Swanson, appreciate it. Thank you. I know it's been a long day, long night. But we'll check back in with you soon, hopefully, and get the latest on what's happening. Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, you got it. Meanwhile, a government shutdown looming in Washington. We'll talk about that next. But first, 6:44, time for Ion Engineering, brought to you by CSP, rethinking composites for a lighter, sustainable future.
Electric autonomous farm equipment company Monarch wants its Monarch One AI platform to bring autonomy to far more than just its own tractors and beyond. The company says the sensor, hardware, and cloud software suite that currently keeps their electric tractor between grapevines can also control a grain auger and even diesel construction equipment. The vision-based software stack will accept data and input from other sensors. For example, thermal imaging and moisture sensors could be added, and with machine learning, the software can recognize how to integrate the data into its tasks. The software is embedded in the vehicle for real-time control of tasks. That said, it does support over-the-air updates. In the grain auger example, an operator would no longer have to exit a truck. Alignment of the truck and starting the delivery would be done with a few commands on a smartphone. For SAE International, I'm Chris Klontz, and that's an Eye on Engineering.
We've got an opportunity for you to win $1,000 coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, so make sure you're listening. It's our 5K a day here on 760 WJR. Hey, maybe if you want to help avoid a government shutdown, maybe you could just send that to the government. Maybe that'll make all the difference.
Wow. Yeah, 1K.
Yeah. 1,000, that will help all of us feeling so generous.
That might make the deal.
7 o'clock hour. Stay listening. We'll give you an opportunity to win.
So will the government shut down Wednesday at 12:01 a.m.? That is the question. This government shutdown is looming. Today, the president is supposed to meet with the top four congressional leaders to maybe find a breakthrough. Ryan Schmelz, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor, joins us now. Good morning, Ryan.
Bad morning. Hello, everyone.
Oh, no.
Bad because you're probably going to be up until 12:01 a.m. on Wednesday?
Oh, I haven't even thought about that.
Yeah,
yet.
So your Ravens had a rough weekend.
Yeah, well, fortunately, Ole Miss had an amazing win, so I can put my hat on that.
Hottie toddy.
Yes, the live look at Baltimore right now is
Well, I totally get it. Sports is top of mind for a lot of us here in Detroit for different reasons. But let's talk about the possibility of a government shutdown. Do you think a breakthrough happens between Chuck Schumer, Mike Johnson, Hakeem Jeffries, and John Thune?
It's hard to imagine it happening today. I mean, if it does, I mean, that would be quite substantial. But, you know, this is the first time President Trump is meeting with Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer since he got back to office. So I don't think that everyone is expecting there to be a major breakthrough today. It could be proven wrong, but it just seems like the way that things have been going so far. And as another outlet put the headline for this was the staring match moves to the White House. So that kind of shows you how, you know, on opposite sides, everyone kind of is right now.
I know Schumer says that the deal depends on the Republicans and that the White House is feeling the heat. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I mean, the Republicans might say something totally the opposite, because I think a lot of people feel that Chuck Schumer has the heat on him. I mean, he came under a lot of scrutiny for how he handled the last government funding battle. And, you know, some might believe that that is contributing to why he hasn't been willing to budge on this one. But also you have to keep in mind, too, that, you know, Schumer and Democrats believe that they have some type of leverage here, because, you know, you do need 60 votes in the Senate to pass any type of government funding deal. And so Democrats are saying, well, if you want to get 60 votes, you got to put some type of health care provision in here. So, you know, this is we've covered these government shutdowns before, and usually Republicans will tell you, either on the record or behind closed doors, that, you know, they feel that the media always blames Republicans for this. But, you know, Republicans do believe that this is probably the first one where, you know, they actually can win the messaging battle on this. And, you know, the Schumer shutdown has been a unifying message amongst Republicans, and they've not let up on that since.
Yeah, Jamie mentioned John Thune, the Senate minority leader, majority leader, and he said that it's up to Democrats. Like, there's a bill on their desk right now; they could pass it today, and so they're putting it on them. I mean, it seems like it's a step forward in the right direction. The fact that they're all meeting, right? That meeting between the president and the Democratic leaders went by the wayside last week. So the fact that they're meeting is probably positive.
Yeah, and look, Democrats have been asking for this meeting for some time. They've been pushing for it. They were asking for it going back to August recess. They tried to organize one when they got back, and it hasn't been successful. You know, Republicans pretty much just said that they were going to do this their way and hope that Democrats would cave into the pressure and think that the deal on the table was a good deal. And some might say it is a good deal, because it's an extension in government funding. No cuts or anything like that. Democrats could make the argument that, you know, when you're in the minority like this is actually a pretty decent offer. But that hasn't been the case. And Democrats have said they want to have health care provisions at least as some type of contingency to get them on board. And so that's kind of where we got to this point.
And Mr. Thune was on Meet the Press yesterday, and he basically said what you just said, like, we appreciate what they're saying, but maybe we could have that discussion after we vote to fund the government.
Yeah. Yes, because the Obamacare subsidies that Democrats want to attach, the Republican consensus around this is that, you know, there's plenty of Republicans who do support extending it, but they do believe that the program is in need of reform, that there are certainly some issues that they have with it that need to be talked about. So they're saying, you know, we'll do this at a later date, but, you know, the trust right now from Democrats towards Republicans, at least according to Hakeem Jeffries, is so bad. They don't trust any type of word or assurance saying, oh yeah, we'll talk about this at a later date. They, you know, pretty much they say, no, we need this in writing. We need this put into a bill. We need this into legislation, because any type of just assurance is not going to be good enough for us.
And I'm wondering too, you know, beyond the political chessboard, you know, what will be the real world consequences if Congress misses this deadline? I mean, Schumer dismissed the White House warnings that there are going to be these massive layoffs. He says that's just intimidation. How much of those warnings are politics? How much is reality?
Well, yeah, I mean, that certainly is a possibility. I mean, look, Leader Schumer laid out the issues he had with a government shutdown last time he stopped one from happening, which was that he's worried that the Department of Government Efficiency, Russ Vogt, the OMB director, and you know, back then it was Elon Musk, but he's not really involved anymore. They were the ones who get to reopen the government, and they get to reopen the government the way they want to. And that might include less federal workers. That might include a way to kind of implement some of their DOGE policies. And that was one of the big issues he had. I mean, I don't think those concerns have gone away, but the reality is they're closer to possibly happening this time around. So that's kind of one thing to consider here, too.
We have just 30 seconds left here. Is it possible that Democrats can score some political points here? The base has been clamoring for them to push back. Is this their opportunity?
It certainly is. I mean, that's why they're acting the way they are, is that this is an opportunity for them to get something out of the Republican Party. But whether it's going to be good enough for their base, whatever it ultimately is, if there is a deal at all, that remains to be seen. So we'll see.
Ryan Schmelz, we appreciate your time. We're sorry. We appreciate your suffering when it comes to the
We beat the Browns for you yesterday, though, at least.
Yeah.
But Steelers
I'm not really
won.
Concerned about the Browns.
Sorry about that.
Steelers, I'm concerned about.
Ryan Schmelz, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you.
All right, coming up on JR Morning, you know, we want to get into the light stuff. The Lions win, the Tigers making the playoffs, but there's this heaviness surrounding all of us because of what happened in Grand Blanc. So we're going to get into it further in the 7 o'clock hour.
7:05. Happy Monday. It's good to have you. You talked about it before the break, Jamie, the heaviness that we're feeling this morning coming out of Grand Blanc, the shooting, the ramming of the truck into the Church of the Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints there. Four people dead. That includes the shooter. Two were found later in the rubble from the fire that was started by this 40-year-old shooter.
Yeah, Thomas Jacob Sanford is the alleged shooter, 40 years old, as you said, from Burton. Allegedly took his truck, rammed it into a brick wall. It wasn't the door. It was this brick wall, created havoc, and then started shooting inside the church. Then allegedly used some accelerant to set the place on fire. Terrible. I mean, these people are just celebrating, worshiping their faith on a Sunday morning at 10:25 in the morning.
And you know, you start thinking, it's like, where can you go? Where can you go? You, church, you know, you're going in to worship and something like this happens. You know, a grocery store, all kind of places. Where can you go and feel safe? People are just, you know, shooting instead of discussing. I don't get it, man.
Reuben Coleman, the head of the FBI here in Detroit, says that this is a federal investigation and they're heading the charge.
I can confirm at this time that the FBI is now leading the investigation and is investigating this as an act of targeted violence.
And one of the things that the FBI is certainly looking into is the motive. And Daniel Roberts, the former head of the FBI here in Detroit, tells us that that's what they're searching for.
Well, clearly they're opening a civil rights investigation targeting largely freedom of religion would give them the jurisdiction they need to be involved in that. But they bring so many assets to the table, you know, everything from bomb technicians to victim witness specialists, and as well as, of course, a cadre of great investigators that can help try to determine what the motive was for this horrific crime.
And I think there are at least four people killed, not including the shooter, because they haven't fully gone through this church.
Yeah.
So there could be more victims.
Scary. And again, a community that's changed forever.
And leaders, including Governor Whitmer and Senator Alyssa Slotkin, of course, the president, the FBI Director Cash Patel, they all condemned the attack. And praise first responders and church officials expressed gratitude for emergency crews and asked for prayers for the victims and the community. And local and national officials continue to monitor the situation, as Jamie said, so we can see if there may be even more victims. We hope not, though.
Yeah, so, you know, keep it with us throughout the day today, and we'll keep you updated on the very latest.
Let's switch gears to something a little lighter. On Saturday, the Tigers clinched a playoff spot.
They did it!
Here's AJ Hinch in that champagne-soaked clubhouse.
We started in the spring. We went up, we went down, we went up again, right? We just 50-plus people that are, some are in this room, some aren't, right? It took 87 wins, and it's like 88 to win the division, right? A team that stays together is what? Very dangerous. The best time to be dangerous is in October.
I got that from Andy Abanez live, like, Instagram feed. He was streaming that live. So they're very excited. They're going to have to play Cleveland now again.
Go back to
three
Cleveland.
In a row as this week progresses. But they're in, and that's what they needed, right?
Right.
They're in. It's what they needed. You know, there's no time to bust a slump like right now.
That's it. If you're going to do it,
this is the
time. If you're going to get hot, now's the time.
Now's the time to get hot, certainly.
And then the Lions did a number.
Oh, my goodness.
On the Browns, speaking of a Cleveland team. that looked pretty good. Do you want to hear the locker room, Dan Campbell locker room, or you want to hear from some of the players?
Your call. Yeah.
Let's do the locker room. I love his celebration.
Me too.
That's number three, man. All right, and here's what we said going into this game. We needed our defense to show up, and we needed special teams, man. That was the beginning of it. Defense, man, three takeaways, two interceptions, one fumble, punch out, and recovery. Allowed only 79 rushing yards, three sacks, and they were 3 of 14 on third down. That's defense. We had a big win the other night, short week. We had to get back, and we did what we had to do. Now, it wasn't good enough, if I'm being totally honest with you. There's so many areas where we shot ourselves in the foot, and we cannot do that, okay? I'm just being honest. Now, it's not going to ruin our Sunday or the rest of the week. I can promise you that.
Man.
And, you know, he's right. I mean, Jared Goff didn't play particularly well yesterday. 16 for 27, two touchdowns and an interception. He was a little off, and the connection with J-Mo was a little off. But, again, they just find a way. They're that good.
And that's what he's saying. He's like, it's great we won. Now let's get back to work because they have a couple road games now where they have to go at Cincinnati on Sunday and then at Kansas City the next Sunday after that. So got to clean up some of those things. Plus, we've got some injuries at corner.
Yes.
Got to work on that, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, there's another hold on Terry and Arnold. All right. We're working on that. What did you make of the Ryder Cup, by the way?
I would love to talk about the Ryder Cup. We are so heavy with really important news.
Yeah.
I thought there's going to be this great American comeback that they were going to win all their matches. Bryson DeChambeau was down five after like seven holes, and he came all the way back on 18. It was very, very exciting. But there's also the issue with how the crowd behaved, and I agree with Rory McIlroy on this.
I don't think we should ever accept that in golf. I think golf should be held to a higher standard than what was seen out there this week. Golf has the ability to unite people. Golf teaches you very good life lessons. It teaches you etiquette. It teaches you how to play by the rules. It teaches you how to respect people. And, you know, sometimes this week we didn't see that. So, this should not be what is acceptable in the Ryder Cup.
We could talk about that further, but the Europeans come through. They beat the Americans on our soil, and that's not the result I wanted.
Yeah, no, but it was a heck of a Sunday.
Yes.
Not so great Friday, Saturday, but a heck of a Sunday.
Thumped
yes.
on those first couple days.
Yeah. 7:12, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. It seems that when it comes to business these days, all we hear about is AI and the impact it's going to have on our businesses as well as on our employees of those businesses, good and bad. Well, with all the sensationalism surrounding AI these days, a little fact-checking for sanity is the focus of today's Business Beat. And that reality check comes from new data just released by Brightside, a market research company. Their study and the new data from it focuses on what's driving attention to our websites these days. And when it comes to search, we're all scrambling to be discovered by AI-driven search. And while there is no doubt we should be, the Bright Edge data shows that while AI search has seen double-digit growth, it still only accounts for less than 1% of all referral traffic when compared with organic search, which still remains the primary driver to publisher websites and still delivers stronger conversions. Why? Well, it's because there's a clear difference in the outcomes each is driving. With respect to AI-driven search, it is proving to be tops when it comes to the research phase of the purchase process, while traditional search still owns the conversions. The research, which spans between January and August of 2025, shows a distinction between growth and business impact. BrightEdge CEO Jim Yu makes an important distinction that AI search functions as a research channel, not a conversion channel. Growth and business impact are different, he points out. While AI search captures headlines with its explosive growth rates, BrightEdge data reveals that organic search remains the primary driver and delivers significantly stronger conversions. So what to do? Well, you suggest marketers should not abandon proven SEO strategies for any shiny new AI tools in the short term, and instead suggest taking a dual approach by optimizing for AI discovery and continuing to support fundamentals of organic search. So there you have it. No doubt AI will continue to take a bigger and bigger bite into the total search process, but for now, it's still organic search that's driving those conversions. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
So while the investigation into Thomas Sanford continues, remember that there's a lot of agencies at play. The community is certainly involved in trying to do anything that they can. We'll catch up with David Martin, the representative who represents that district, coming up momentarily. Do want to give you an opportunity to win that $1,000. Make sure you text this hour's national keyword cash to 95819. That's C-A-S-H to 95819. We'll text you back to confirm your entry. Data and messaging rates may apply. Please do not text and drive. You can play five times each weekday for five chances to win. It's 5K a day on 760 WJR. Official rules and more information are at WJR.com. We do have Representative David Martin on the line with us this morning. Representative, it's good to have you. So this guy plows through the LDS church in his truck, opens fire, sets the church on fire. And what are you hearing this morning on the investigation? What are you hearing from members of the community?
Well, from members of the community, this is a very resilient community. They have great support. They've got great communities, great schools, lots of activities, great government, local government, both in the city and the township. If somebody needs something, if somebody, a family member is trying to help somebody that was harmed yesterday, the Chamber of Commerce, people just came out and asked, you know, whatever they could do for food service, comfort service, check with the Chamber. They have it. It's a great community, so they'll be resilient in that. As far as hearing other things, the most disturbing thing so far that I don't know any answers on this. We had a Marine Corps veteran. We just had a Marine do another shooting recently. I hope this is not a trend. You know, our service members need the support. I would encourage them not just to be on FaceTime with their buddies, not just to be in their bubble, but to go to a brick and mortar VFW, DAV, AMVETS, something not just for the club room, but to, you know, shared experiences, go someplace that's active in helping disabled veterans, active in honor guard and ceremonies. Just make sure you have your shared experience and have an outlet, but do it in a brick and mortar face-to-face with your buddies. Don't just be locked in on FaceTime.
Representative, you know, beyond security measures, what can the state do to strengthen mental health resources or early warning systems to identify these individuals at risk of community committing this mass violence?
You know, you just asked one of the toughest questions in a free society. What can we do? And, you know, available resources and so forth. And what happened in the past? And can we reestablish the care levels? We're trying to do that for the schools. We reinstituted the mental health funding in the schools that was cut before, and we're focused on that. But we have to be resilient in ourselves, too. You know, I'm not encouraging everybody to go out and purchase a firearm purposely to defend themselves, but I do want to remind people that they can. I mean, if they're the father, if they're responsible for a group of people, make sure you have trained people around you. There's nothing wrong with that. And good guys stop bad guys. It's a very simple formula when that happens. But you have to have the fortitude and courage and training to do so.
Yeah, and I know some people might listening might say, okay, so the answer is more guns on our streets and in our homes and businesses instead of less?
No, there's plenty of guns out there. It's the training, it's the courage, it's the fortitude to be prepared, especially when you're here's what irritates me the most about this. Gun-free zones. Why do these always happen in a gun-free zone? There's got to be a reason for that. There's got to be a way that we can, you know, church services have going to security teams and so forth. Obviously, we have resource officers in schools. We need to protect ourselves in those ways. It's not just necessarily the individual, but we have to remember that good guys stop bad guys.
And we don't have the details yet about how the shooter obtained his weapons, but there have been measures put into place here in the state to try to curtail people who maybe shouldn't have guns medically, right? If they've got issues, mental issues that they're dealing with, that they wouldn't be able to purchase a gun. Do we know if any of that was at play here from folks that you've talked to?
I would have no idea, okay. But I do know when I mentioned military veterans earlier, my wife did two tours in Iraq. I'm a retired veteran. That's a, you know, to identify somebody just because they're in combat or so forth, if you they're afraid to report sometimes their PTSD or their thoughts because of their right to bear arms. Is one of the reasons. Mm. If they're identified as having a psychological impact, it affects their individual rights. And the people that fought for those rights, that stood up and raised their hand and said, I will go and defend those rights for others, to lose those is a very concerning thing for them. So it's a very touchy situation, something really has to be dealt with counseling. But I encourage them to do it face-to-face. Go to your brick-and-mortar veterans organizations. Don't just be on FaceTime in a bubble with your buddies. Go and do FaceTime. Go face-to-face at the local VFWs and American Legions and DAVs and Marine Corps League. Be out there and talk to somebody.
Are you personally going to plan to engage with the victims' families and the faith community in this aftermath, Representative?
I'm going to be out there. I'm meeting with several elected officials today, trying to share resources, what we can do. But yes, I've been with the local community leaders. I'm very tight with the local law enforcement here. Been involved in the community. I spend a lot of my time in Grand Blanc. So much activities going on. So yeah, it'd be very easy to reach out. I've been told that I'm acquainted with somebody that was in the church, maybe one of the victims. I haven't gotten the word, the details hasn't been released, but I'll be very concerned that they get to services, whatever we can do. The federal level, they have some mental health and counseling things. Make sure that those are all incorporated in the local area. That's where we're meeting with the federal and state and local officials today.
Representative David Martin, appreciate the time. We're praying for the community, certainly, as they try to pick up the pieces here and as authorities look for a motive in this case. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate that. I just got to remind everybody we have to fight evil with love. Very difficult to do. We get angry, evil with love.
Yeah, that's a good message.
100%.
Yeah, good message. All right, well, let's lighten things up a little bit. The Lions with a big win yesterday. We'll talk to our dude, Lomas Brown, next on JR Morning.
Electric vehicle drivers save big. With Consumers Energy, you can earn up to $620 in rebates and cash back just for charging your EV at home. That's on top of what you're already saving by skipping the gas station and avoiding those regular vehicle maintenance costs. And with nearly 5,000 public charging ports across Michigan and more popping up all the time, you'll spend more time driving and less time charging. Visit consumersenergy.com/EV to learn more.
Dan said it great after the game. Like, good. We're going to be happy. But, like, we can be so much better. And certainly offensively, the defense played outstanding, right? That is a good defense. And they do present a lot of problems. And you take Khalif's punt return away. We scored 27 points. I mean, and you know, it's not like I'm saying that's good enough, because today there was a lot of little things that it could have been better. But it's still a winning performance and enough to get the W. And I'm proud of our guys for fighting through some of the little adversity early on.
Get a little happier, Jared. You're 3-1, leading the division. You beat the Cleveland Browns 34-10. That is the topic of our discussion today for Inside the Huddle, sponsored by CNC Heating and Air Conditioning. Call 800-MY-FURNACE or visit cncheat.com. Bringing in Lomas Brown now. Lomas, are you pumped, or did you see some of the things that Jared was talking about on Sunday?
Hey, Jamie, when you're playing at the level that the Lions are playing at, it's going to be things. It's going to be things. And I kind of feel the way Jared feels. There was a lot of plays that they left out there. I felt that the offense was a little uneven. But, I mean, the defense is playing at such a high level right now. And that happens. It happens throughout a season where you have one unit that's playing a little better than the other unit, or a unit that has to support another unit. So, I mean, they're going to always be that way, Jamie. It can't always be roses, you know?
Low, Aiden Hutchinson, monster game, two sacks, forced fumble, constant pressure. He is really evolving into not just a playmaker, but really like a tone setter for the entire defense.
I'm going to tell you, Lloyd, what happens. When you go and there's another outstanding defensive end that you watch, like, and I'm talking about Myles Garrett, that kind of motivates you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's kind of a motivating factor. And I seen Aiden and the Miles embrace before the game started. So I knew that Aiden wanted to go out there and put his best foot forward. And, oh, my God, yes, he was the tone setter. He's pretty much been that way. But you could just see him getting better and better. And you could just see him take that step to the next level yesterday. It was amazing. And it was nice to see that performance.
All right, Lo, I'm going to take a different approach. You know, they're going to need that defensive line to be great next week against Cincinnati, because they have some real problems at cornerback. DJ Reed was hurt in that game, looks to be at least significant. Dan Campbell said he probably won't play next week until they get some tests, but it looks significant. Terrion Arnold, they've talked about cutting his involvement down with this defense, but they're going to need him to step up now. At corner, they got some issues.
Yeah, we do have injuries at the corner position. We're thin there. It would be interesting to see what type of transition that they make throughout this week getting ready for Cincinnati. But, man, you're right. They're bringing in two of the best receivers in this league. And I expect them probably not to play as much man defense as we've been playing. You know, we're a heavy man defense in the secondary. So I expect a little bit more safety help. It was great to see Kirby Joseph back there patrolling the backfield the way he was getting that interception. And I think we're going to need a lot more of that next week going up against the Cincinnati Bengals team, unless we could get Jake Browning off his spot like you're talking about, with pressure from Aiden and those front four guys.
I'm torn, Lomas. I have Ja'Marr Chase on my fantasy team. I'm just kidding. Lions over fantasy team, always, of course. What do you see overall from this Lions team that they started off poorly, and now the way they've bounced back and sort of settling into the team that we thought they would be?
Yeah, I mean, we have a great team here. We really do. If you think about position from position, we have talent on this team. We have, I think, the best coach in this league, the best motivator in this league, and that's what happens when you got great talent, you got great motivators and coaches that put together great schemes. This is what you get. I mean, you know, I think Lion fans, I think we all should be, I don't say getting used to this, but, hey, it's great that this team is at the level it's at. It's been playing at this level, and we expect this now, Jamie. We beat Baltimore down, and I told you back then the expectations went up. And I think we expect that from this team each and every week.
You said that Baltimore win was like franchise-changing win.
Yeah.
You went hard.
And I meant that. I meant that, Jamie. I mean, you know, again, I told you I was in that 91 game, and unfortunately we weren't able to keep that trajectory going up. But I can't see why this team won't be able to ride this momentum out the rest of the season.
Lo, Jared Goff's numbers, they were kind of modest against this elite, you know, pass defense, but they still scored 34 points. So that kind of lets you know that Detroit can win in different ways.
Absolutely, and that's what you want to do. You want to be put in situations where you have to win games in different ways, and you're absolutely right about that, Lord, because everything's not going to be peaches and roses, you know, each and every Sunday or Monday whenever we play. It's going to be some ups and downs. You know, we're going to have to battle through some injuries like we did. And so it's just great to see that these guys are resilient. Whatever you put in front of them, hey, they're going to cross it.
What do you think Amon-Ra St. Brown means to this team? I mean, he's obviously everything. A great talent, but what does he really mean to
everything? Everything. I think he helps bring the identity to this team. Think about it. If he isn't getting the ball, he got his nose in there getting dirty, blocking. You know what I'm saying? He's the tone setter. He's the guy that I think Jared looks for to settle him down anytime the game isn't going the way it needs to go. He's a tough little fella there, and I think he brings that toughness to the team, and he's a grit guy. He's a Dan Campbell type of guy, and as we know, Brad Holmes and that organization say you have to be a certain type of player to play for the Lions, and Amon-Ra is that guy.
Well, I'll tell you who feels pretty good about the win. That's Aiden Hutchinson.
Yes. Oh, I'm telling you, man. I don't know what that dance is, Jamie, with the leg, but I might have to learn that for the booth, because every time he does something good, he breaks out that little leg dance, whatever that is.
That's good.
I feel great and feel like I'm in a good spot and just going to continue to stack the games.
There you go. He feels great. And that's good social media content, you practicing that dance. Put it out there.
I will, Jamie.
Okay. All right. Lomas Brown, color analyst for the Detroit Lions Radio Network, and our guy, co-host of Sports Wrap here on WJR. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you a lot more this season.
Thanks, family.
See you, Lo.
It was fun.
It's a good win. When the team is winning and there's positivity in that clubhouse, locker room. And the clubhouse of the Tigers. Good times. But what we have to talk about is what happened in Grand Blanc, a Sunday service turning into a scene of horror. What we know, what's the latest? Next on JR Morning.
Up to four victims. As I said before, there has already been the suspect who is deceased as well. So we have five deceased persons from this tragic incident.
That is the police chief out in Grand Blanc as they're trying to pick up the pieces, the investigation underway into what happened at the LDS church in Grand Blanc as a 40-year-old man drives his truck into the side of the building, opens fire, and sets the building on fire. Four people now dead. That includes the 40-year-old shooter. And now the investigation turns to what happened here, what was the planning stages like, what was the motive here in this situation.
The suspect is identified as Thomas Jacob Sanford of Burton. He rams his pickup truck into the chapel during Sunday services, then sets everything ablaze after he was firing on churchgoers. And two law enforcement officers were on the scene within 30 seconds of that original 911 call, and they killed Sanford in the church parking lot. So the police response was impeccable, but it still couldn't prevent a madman from doing that.
Here's William Rennie on the action of the police.
We had officers on scene at 10:25 and 57 seconds. The suspect, again, we're in the preliminary stages right now, was neutralized at 10:33, 44 in the parking lot of that church.
So yeah, acted quickly.
One church member died from his gunshot wounds. Another one died at the hospital. And then they found two people within the fire as they're going through the remains here. It's horrible.
And when you have law enforcement on the scene and as many different types of law enforcement, it's very important for them to all work together. And I know we had the Genesee County Sheriff, Chris Swanson, on, and he said everybody really worked well together.
I have to say, I've been doing this for 33 years. It was a beautiful thing to see. There were no egos yesterday. Everybody worked together to figure out who can do what, who has what services. And that's why it's important. Jurisdiction is one thing, but it's more who has the resources to respond. And all of that worked out. And clearly, it's a federal issue at this point.
Clearly a federal issue at this point, but yeah. Everybody is chipping in.
Everybody has their part and plays their part, and everybody has their strengths, and they're playing on those strengths. which is beneficial to the community.
Daniel Roberts, the former head of the FBI in Detroit, says now as they investigate this man's home, as they investigated his truck that was used in this case, they're just trying to find out what drove him to this.
Well, clearly they're opening a civil rights investigation targeting largely freedom of religion would give them the jurisdiction they need to be involved in that. But they bring so many assets to the table, you know, everything from bomb technicians to victim witness specialists, and as well as, of course, a cadre of great investigators that can help try to determine what the motive was for this horrific crime.
And we're like, you know, asking all the questions that happens after every shooting in this country. Who was this person? Mm-hmm. And it looks like he was deployed to Iraq as Operation Iraqi Freedom. He earned several awards during his 4 years of service, including the Marine Corps Good Conduct Medal, Sea Service Deployment Ribbon, Iraq Campaign Medal, Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, and a National Defense Service Medal. And if you look online, which you can't, you know, everything take it with a grain of salt, looked like he was a family man with a wife and a son. And how did we get here? And this is just after another service member opened fire in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On a boat, pulls up to like a dockside restaurant and just starts shooting. That person, a Purple Heart recipient and a decorated Marine who served in Iraq before he changed his name to Nigel Edge. So these Marines and these people who serve in war are hurting.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. 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 And what is there enough that we can do for them? Is there more that we can, like, you know, all of those questions are at play here. And we'll see what this investigation turns up. But those questions need to continue to be asked. Is how do we better serve our veterans?
Yeah. Yeah. We've been talking about that for such a long time, and I think sometimes, you know, they fall through the cracks, and we don't need that. These are our veterans who've gone through some tremendous trauma in wars and, mm-hmm. and other things, and you know, they get back here and sometimes they snap if they don't get the help that they need, and they need it.
And now you've got a community that's left to pick up the pieces.
Yes.
And we've seen that, whether it's been at, you know, in East Lansing after a horrific shooting, mm-hmm. at Oxford. After a horrific shooting. You know, the community tends to rally. The community tends to do everything that they can to help out any way that they can. But they are still hurting. And Jamie, you lived up there, and you know that area very well. It's just, it's heartbreaking. To think that, you know, people go every day of their lives, they go about their day, they go to the bank, they go to the grocery store, they don't ever think anything like this happens.
No.
In your backyard.
No,
and it's a nice sort of suburban kind of atmosphere up there. I lived off of Saginaw. If you came out of my apartment, turn right, Warwick Hills was on the right. Mm-hmm. A lot of people know that through the Buick Open. Mm-hmm. And you continue going in that direction, then you come to the road where this church was on. And like, if you continued on Saginaw, the high school's right there. There's like restaurants and a Walmart. And it's just like typical Americana suburban area. And I'm sure these people had no idea something like this was lurking and about to happen.
I saw an interview with this one lady, this older woman, and she's like, I've been going to this church for 35 years. Like 35 years. I go here every Sunday. Mm-hmm. I see my neighbors. I see my friends. Mm-hmm. I see their kids. I see their grandkids. I go here. I've been going here for decades. And to think that all of a sudden next Sunday I can't go, or you know, this has completely thrown our lives upside down. It has tested our faith. It is changing the way that now we are going to practice our faith is heartbreaking in and of itself. So it's tough.
It is, and you know, it makes you just think, where can I go? And you don't want to live in fear. You don't want to live in fear. You want to go about your business and go about your daily lives, but you have to. You have to be aware. You have to have mm-hmm. your head on a swivel. You do.
And a lot of our elected leaders are weighing in. The governor has released a statement, praying for the community, and lawmakers all across the spectrum have weighed in too. So it's a tough day. It really is a tough day.
No, it is. And we're having more and more of these, like, you know, lately.
Yeah, it seems that way. And some of these we haven't even talked about because of the nature of some of these other shootings.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's been pretty steady for the last couple of weeks. Also, some good news. The Tigers did clinch a playoff spot yesterday. After the consternation of the last couple of weeks, months, they are going to be in the postseason.
Let's be happy for 1 second here about these Tigers. Okay, it was up and down, mostly down to end the regular season. But here is A.J. Hinch after they clinch in a champagne-soaked clubhouse.
We started in the spring. We went up. We went down. We went up again, right? We just 50-plus people. That aren't, some are in this room, some aren't, right? It took 87 wins, and it's like 88 to win the division, right? A team that stays together is what? Very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
The best time to be dangerous is in October.
Yeah. Picture them listening intently, and then the best time to be dangerous is in October, and then champagne and jumping.
Yeah, right.
And
uh-huh.
I got that from Andy Ibanez's like live feed. He was so he must have gotten a text in the middle of that.
So we get to get some redemption. We get to redeem ourselves because we have to play Cleveland again in Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got to you get an opportunity.
Yeah.
You get an opportunity. We'll talk to Steve Courtney about that. Also, the Ryder Cup, Lions with a big win. We'll talk to Steve Courtney coming up next on JR Morning.
This fall, avoid the common plumbing issues like clogged drains, sump pump failure, frozen pipes by calling my friends at Shelby Mechanical. I use Shelby Mechanical personally. When I have problems, I call them. They text me that they're on their way. You know, I've used them to clear debris out of our outside pipes. We have a new sink system because of Shelby Mechanical. I love Shelby Mechanical. This fall, make sure to take advantage of the Shelby Mechanical plumbing discounts. How about $35 off garbage disposal replacement, $100 off water heater install, and $50 off snake and camera service? Take advantage of these fall discounts. To get same-day or next-day plumbing service, call Shelby Mechanical for your home or office, 586-726-9444, or visit shelbymechanical.net. That's shelbymechanical.net. For projects big and small, you know who to call. Shelby Mechanical for all your plumbing needs. All right, we are talking Tigers. We are excited about this three-game series. Is Steve Courtney excited about it? WJR Senior Sports Analyst joining us now. Hey, Steve.
Jamie, what's going on? Hello, group. You know, it's interesting as we look forward to this wild card series with the Guardians. You know, I'm sure there's some deep-rooted Tiger fans that, quite frankly, are a little bit disappointed with the way things worked out because let's quickly review, shall we? The Tigers were in first place in the American League Central for 175 days. That includes 154 consecutive days. It doesn't seem all that long ago, right, you guys, that the Tigers and Blue Jays were neck and neck, literally, for the best overall record in the American League. That gets you a bye, that gets you a home playoff series, and then we know it was the collapse seen around the world. The Tigers finish 87-75. They are the sixth seed in the American League wild card round. They will go in having lost 13 of their last 16. And then they find themselves back in Cleveland to face a Guardian team that has been on quite a roll. There's no doubt about it. As a matter of fact, Cleveland wins the American League Central thanks in large part to 5 head-to-head wins over our Tigers in 6 meetings over the final couple of weeks. So we know this. The series itself getting underway in the land of Cleves, 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, as a matter of fact. You will have Tarek Skubal on the bump for the Old English Deers on 6 days rest. His last start, as a matter of fact, coming on September 23rd in Cleveland. One of the more bizarre sixth innings you will ever see. He plunked David Fry with a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. There was a balk. There was all sorts of things going on. But the Tigers go 21-10 in Tarek Skubal's 31 starts this season. So I guess there for a while, with all things being equal, you guys, there was a battle cry towards the end just to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Because you certainly didn't want to go through the season that the Tigers did early to be on the outside looking in. And, of course, they secured a postseason berth with that win at Fenway Park Saturday against the Red Sox.
I think we're all looking at these numbers like the Guardians trailed the Tigers by 9.5 games on September 10th with 17 games remaining. We all know that and how that was like a terrible collapse. But AJ Hinch has got to put that in the rear view with these guys and motivate them somehow, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I don't think anybody knows or perhaps is more disappointed than this Tiger team. They know what the deal is. But then again, you get to a point where you certainly didn't want to be like the New York Metropolitans who were setting the world on fire in June. And now, look, they are on the outside looking in. And the Tigers didn't want to do that. Could you imagine the polarized opposite of what the Tigers accomplished at the end of last year? And there was so much excitement. And then to have it go the way it did and not make the postseason. So, look.
Yeah, that would have been worse.
It would have been a very long winter. But now you are in. And, you know, players play. And I know there was a, you know, some under the impression, what's AJ Hinch doing here? Well, look, I've always been under the impression that players play. And you've got to perform. And that is from top to bottom. And so now you're in, and then you're going against a team that eliminated you in five games last year.
Well, and they're really going to, you thought last postseason was pitching chaos. I think this is going to be the height of pitching chaos in this series.
After Skubal starts.
Yep.
Well, it's the best of three series. So you've got Skubal, you've got Jack Flaherty, you got Casey Mize. After that, it's a complete mishmash. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if the Tigers advance, how that plays out. But first things first, you've got to take care of business in Cleveland. Again, a very short series. The margin of error is extremely small.
So let's talk about the Ryder Cup. I was with them. I was engaged yesterday. I thought they were going to make an epic comeback. And what Bryson DeChambeau did was epic.
Yeah, Bryson DeChambeau, you know, unbelievable. He ends up having his match with Matt Fitzpatrick. He was five down through seven holes. And then you had the number one, Scottie Scheffler. He was winless, as a matter of fact, through his first four sessions. He beats number two, Rory McIlroy, and you're thinking, boy, there is a chance. But we've got to address this because it's just something I don't understand. Europe started play yesterday needing just a couple of points to beat the USA. It led 11.5 to 4.5 after play concluded on Saturday. The score moved 12-5 when Victor Hovland was forced to withdraw from singles because of that neck injury, which turned his scheduled match against Harris English into a draw. Now, there's this whole envelope thing where the team captains put a name in there in case of an injury, the player that they do not want to play. And, you know, in this particular case, it was Harris English. My question becomes moving forward, and Keegan Bradley addressed this, was if there is a withdrawal for injury reasons, why are you awarded a half point
right,
as opposed to being considered a forfeit? And the full point goes to the team that's involved in this. They've got to straighten that out.
Thank goodness it didn't end 14-14, and then that half point was it.
Oh, could you imagine, Jane?
Oh.
I mean, and that possibility, that they discussed it during the broadcast yesterday. Europe ends up going on to win it 15-13, so the point is moot. But I still, for the life of me, don't understand that. Now, in case you're wondering, the 2027 Ryder Cup, the 46th edition of this amazing event, will be at Adair Manor in County Limerick, Ireland, the second time the Emerald Isle will host a Ryder Cup. But there is a lot of discussion going on about the gallery, and it just, quite frankly, got out of hand. And you know what? To be honest, it was discussed, being in New York at Bethpage, that the crowd could get a little hostile. As a matter of fact, there was a thought they could get hostile towards the U.S. if things were not going well. But I thought more times than not, when you've got to bring law enforcement in for the Saturday sessions, I was really saddened by that.
I found it disgusting the way Rory McIlroy was treated by our fans. Not okay. And
well,
that's what I think
fact,
Keegan Bradley should have said.
You know what, Jame? The MC who was taking care of business on the first tee, she had to remove herself because she's the one that started this anti-Rory chant. And it was disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, is this where we're at right now? It's golf for crying out loud.
Yeah, I know. It's not okay. I don't like it one bit. One bit. Well, I hate
You want to yell things that are golf related? Okay, I get that. But, you know, a lot of the insults that were hurled at Rory for no reason at all in his family.
Right.
Right. And his wife got hit with a beer can. Not okay.
Yeah, there's several angles of that crazy moment. And apparently somebody slapped it out of somebody's hand and it went towards Rory's wife. But the fact of the matter is, why are you putting yourself in a situation like that?
I hate to end on that because it was fun to watch him at the end. And it's going to be fun watching our Tigers. Thank you, Steve Courtney.
All right, you folks, enjoy this beautiful Monday. Let's go Tigers, huh?
Go Tigers. Coming up, accountability and structure to the State Department, a novel idea by Bill Heisinger at 8:35.
Congressman right here in the state of Michigan. It's Congressman Bill Heisinger who joins us this morning. It's good to have you.
Hey, good to be with you, and happy Monday, and go Lions. So we had a good win yesterday.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about that. Meanwhile, I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on these ongoing negotiations on the budget. I want to talk about the reauthorization in just a minute. But where are we as we sit here today on getting a budget done before a potential shutdown?
Well, as we bathe in the hypocrisy of Chuck Schumer, it's kind of fascinating to see how not that long ago this guy was talking about the importance of making sure that we do everything that we can to keep the government open. His base reacted in a way that put him in a very bad light. And so now he's changed, and he's changed his position. And I don't think it's because that's necessarily what he believes. I think it's because of the pressure that has been applied. And so, frankly, we've got to make sure that the pressure is felt by those in the Senate now to keep it open. You know, there was one Democrat who joined in the House resolution, the bill that we passed, that is going to keep government open, frozen at the negotiated levels of 2024. By the way, he was part of that negotiation. And it's going to take us through till nearly the end of November, and it's going to keep the negotiations going. So it's just frustrating sitting here knowing that this is a terrible way to keep government funded and keep it going. But we now have an even less willing partner to keep it open and functioning.
So the meeting with the president today, will there be hope that we'll get a deal?
Good question. This is one thing I've learned about Donald Trump. He actually is in search of an agreement and in a deal. I mean, the guy literally wrote the book called The Art of the Deal, right? He didn't write the book, The Wait, Sit Back, See What Chuck's Going to Do. That isn't his MO. But I think it's really going to be dependent on what happens internally for Chuck Schumer with some of those other folks who are a little more moderate, or they're coming from states that might be more split. That will, I think, really determine what's going to be happening here. But we've got the Yom Kippur deadline and sort of looming, which is going to limit what the Senate's going to do and even what the House is going to do. But look, we passed our bill over a week ago. Sent it to the Senate. The House version couldn't get 60 votes, but the Chuck Schumer Senate version, Democrat version, couldn't get 60 votes either. So they've got to figure this out.
Let's talk about this reauthorization of the State Department, first time in 20 years. What is the goal here? You know, sort of make it make sense for all of us. What's happening?
Yeah, well, as you rightly noted, the last time that we had a full authorization and rewrite of the State Department was right after 9/11. It was in 2002. So here we are 23 years later, and what has happened is a good chunk, about 75% of the State Department operates and gets funded, but it has actually outstripped the authorization, meaning it's outside the legal operational bounds. And we just viewed this as an opportunity to say, okay, let's tighten some things up. A lot of people know all those stories about some of the wokeness and the stuff that had been going on through the State Department internationally. Lots of questions about who's speaking for what branch and for what area. The area that I am in control of is regarding the Undersecretary for Public Diplomacy. And what we're trying to do is make sure that we are on the same page, have an administration and have those that work for the administration to be on the same page. And one of those things is to look at how we expand access to free information. How do we expose the lies of our adversaries? How do we make sure that the facts are out there and apparent? And really, how are we going to promote the interests of the United States? And that's the goal and objective.
Does this have to go to Congress, or is this something that the House Foreign Affairs Committee has jurisdiction over?
Yeah, we have jurisdiction over it, and it has passed out of committee, this very large comprehensive bill. It is then going to head to the floor of the House. So it has to pass the House, and then it would go to the Senate as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the good thing is that we've been working closely with Marco Rubio and the White House to try to encourage that. You know, it's very helpful, frankly, having Rubio be there, who is a former senator himself, you know, with the relations that he has. That is going to be, I think, helpful as we try to get this moved along. But it's time. You know, the bottom line is we're trying to make America stronger, and it's going to make sure that our fight for truth and freedom is something that we're leading on, and we're not just reacting to with our adversaries.
Congressman, you've included provisions to protect free speech and prevent censorship blacklists. Kind of explain the concern that prompted that language and how it's going to be enforced.
Yeah, well, what happened in the last administration, and there was some legislation surrounding this with the creation of what some had dubbed the Truth Czar, right, or Czarina, to be technically correct. The person that they had appointed was a female. But what was happening was a program intended to take foreign disinformation and foreign sources of disinformation was actually being turned internally and being used for domestic uses and purposes, which was completely outside of the bounds of what the State Department is supposed to be doing or what this program intended. And that's where we saw, frankly, a pretty significant push against the conservative voices, shocker, right? That those conservative voices were labeled as disinformation and were attacked, yet we saw actual disinformation from our foreign adversaries being ignored. And so we're all about trying to straighten that out and make sure that the State Department is focused outward, not inward. Mm.
Congressman Bill Huizenga, appreciate this. Keep us up to date on how this is progressing, and we'll talk about it very soon, I'm sure.
It sounds good, and like I said, keep that pressure up. Let's try to keep this government open and mm-hmm. let our senators know.
Yeah, no doubt. Congressman Bill Huizenga here on JR Morning. Meanwhile, coming up on the other side, it is Monday, and we try to highlight some of the up-and-coming, the restaurants that are staples in our community, not only here in the city but in the metro area. We will highlight the Rectory coming up here on JR Morning.
Welcome back to JR Morning. It's a Monday where we have Monday Munchies, highlighting Metro Detroit restaurants and businesses. And Detroit's historic Boston Edison neighborhood is welcoming a fresh slice of favor with the opening of The Rectory, a new pizza restaurant set inside the former rectory of a nearby church at 1920 Atkinson Street, right next door to the popular church turn cafe, The Congregation. Joining us to share the story behind this unique space and mouth-watering menu is the owner of The Rectory, Betsy Murdoch. Betsy, thank you so much for coming in and bringing this delicious pizza.
Of course.
The Breakfast of Champions. Yay!
Nothing like pizza at 8 o'clock.
No, no doubt.
It's almost 9.
Yeah,
there we go. That's exactly.
You've already helped breathe some new life into the neighborhood with the congregation. So, what inspired you to take on another project in the city?
Yeah, I mean, everything for us just kind of has to feel right. We're not out there seeking new business opportunities, but the house that's located next to the congregation was the original rectory for the church. Mm-hmm. And just the way it's oriented and the green space that we have, we really thought, like, we have to have this property. Had no idea what we wanted to do with it. And COVID happened right after we opened the congregation. And okay. So it gave us some time to brainstorm what we wanted to do with the house itself. And so our idea is always community focused. So we wanted something that we could bring to the community that we didn't already have. And food and beverage is definitely something we're lacking over there. And so we wanted to be complimentary to the congregation. Congregation's focused on coffee, kind of more breakfast, lunch. And so we wanted to bring in a more evening specific dinner approach. Pizza was first and foremost on all of our brains because, one, it's approachable. Everyone loves pizza. Mm-hmm. It's accessible. It's affordable. We really wanted to bring something that you can get something as simple as a cheese pizza for a kid's birthday party, but, you know, also go crazy. Do something like our Sunday Sugo where we're making our own meatballs and smoking them in house. And so it's been a lot of fun to be able to be creative in that way, but still be approachable.
The neighborhood, though, kind of played a part in this as well. They kind of asked for different things, right?
Yeah. So once they saw what we were doing with the congregation, it was kind of just like, this is what we need. Once upon a time, Rosa Parks was a huge commercial corridor where there was a lot of small business. And over time, it's just kind of gone by the wayside. And so I think we've got a lot of different generations of people who have been there for 40, 50 years who have seen that transition.
Yes.
And so those people have been very supportive because they know what our neighborhood is capable of doing and achieving. And so being able to see us bring that to light has really been awesome.
Hand-tossed pies, locally sourced ingredients, fresh salads. You can get gluten-free if you want, non-alcoholic if you want. So you're trying really to appeal to everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about your pizzas. These are delicious. You brought in. Tell us what you brought in.
Yeah. So first and foremost, we're making our own dough from scratch. It's a 3-day ferment process, so it's very time-consuming. But we really wanted to bring something that was unique to us and also good quality. So the two pizzas I brought this morning have been our top seller since we started kind of our slow open back in June. But first is our Sunday Sugo. It's our, you know, red sauce base with mozzarella cheese, and we make our own meatball mix and smoke them in-house. So that's on there, and a ricotta whip. The other one is our Space Cowboy. It's a ranch-based pizza, so no red sauce, still mozzarella, smoked chicken that we're smoking in-house. Pepperoncini and red onions.
I love that one. I ate that one already.
and the ingredients that you're using, kind of broad appeal too, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we're trying to hit all of those toppings that you can get at other pizza joints. We have definitely realized that people are very specific about their pizza. We've noticed that with the congregation too. People are very specific about their coffee. So really being able to hit that need, but then also bringing your own spin and creativity to it.
Are there signature dishes or drinks that people like have to have when they come in?
Yeah. So actually we do have right now just beer and wine.
Okay.
We're planning on bringing in some more cocktail focused items, but our front of house manager has also been focused a lot on non-alcoholic things. So we're making house-made lemonades. Our number one lemonade is a blueberry basil lemonade. It has been by far the most popular with adults and with kids. We've got a regular lemonade. We're also doing coffee. So we've got a really fun coffee campana with right now it's a vanilla pear whip that we're putting on top of the coffee. So trying to be really fun, but like approachable
different
for our guests.
Yeah.
That's a trend, actually, people not wanting to have an alcoholic drink and trying that sort of sober situation.
Sure.
And so you have that there.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We're really trying to focus on like all of our targets. People are very keen about gluten-free. So while we can't be 100% gluten-free, we've got a gluten-friendly crust option. Really trying to hone in on what our customer and community base is looking for.
What has the neighborhood response been?
It's been great. One thing that's great is, like, we've got the congregation. Everyone knows us. They know the congregation. And so we've got a shared loyalty program that is shared between the two. So if you get something at the congregation, you can get points and earn rewards and use them at the rectory. And so we've seen a big uptick in just, like, regular family outings on Friday, Saturday nights with a lot of our customers that are over at the congregation, which all live within a few blocks of where we're located.
I'm going to go back to the menu for just a minute, because what is the process of coming up with these pizzas, right? The trial and error, walk us through what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was very lucky in the very early stages to have a chef to kind of help me brainstorm some things. But it's a lot of testing and R&D and just also listening to our customer base. We've already removed one pizza and brought in a new one since the time that we've opened, just because looking at also the labor that it takes to make that pizza, but the success of, you know, what customers are looking for. But it's a lot of just, I scroll a lot on Instagram, just like, what are people eating right now?
So, what's the one that's on the menu now? That one?
Yeah, we brought in a vegan pizza. So that was something that we saw.
The Tarabella.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we obviously can make a lot of things vegan, but we wanted to be able to have something on the menu that, you know, if you choose to be vegan, you don't have to think 2 seconds about it. You can just say, I want that pizza. Mm-hmm. So that took me, you know, a couple weeks of playing around with ingredients and trying to make it the best vegan pizza I could possibly make. I didn't want to just throw vegetables on a piece of dough.
Well, Betsy, we will really appreciate you coming in and bringing in this delicious pizza and telling us about the rectory and reminding us about the congregation. I just know that, you know, stained glass windows and all that kind of gives it a different feel, a character when you come in and having something to drink or something to eat. So we appreciate you coming in. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Much success.
Thank you.
With the rectory and also the congregation.
Thank you. Appreciate I appreciate it.
Yeah. Very cool.
Man. This is delicious.
It's very good.
You know, I love pizza in the morning.
Pizza in the morning's great. Pizza afternoon.
I mean, whatever.
Night, it's all very good.
It is.
I like all the options, right?
Sure.
And then they're right next door to each other, so you can kind of bounce back and forth.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
I like the story, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great story. All right, that is going to do it for us today. Make sure you keep it on WJ. I'll keep you updated on everything coming out of Grand Blanc. Kevin Dietz and All Talk coming up. See you tomorrow.